Hi, can everybody hear me? Yes. Okay, thanks a lot. Here we go. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the final episode of this series. So last week we talked about the critically important step of turning to face the small self, the ego self, with love and compassion, and learning to build a bridge between the conscious mind and the darker, more unknown aspects of the self. And we talked about how ultimately there's no separation and no qualitative difference between the higher self and the lesser or lower aspects of the self. That ultimately, in truth, it's all the holy self. So what happens when you and your small self or your ego self, what happens when you're operating as one? What happens when you get onto the same page, so to speak? This is the process that I'm in right now. It's a process of discovery, and I can describe for you some of what I'm experiencing personally as a result of taking this road of integration with the small self. And then some of what I'll describe here is it's just what I intuit that is coming up next for me, because this is really all quite new, and it is a process, and it does take time. And so some of it I haven't fully experienced yet myself, although I can sense that, like, it's right around the corner. So to start with, the resistance that you feel, the friction that you feel in your daily life, I can say for myself, begins to diminish radically. There's that sense of driving with one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake, you know, and maybe even at the most critically difficult times in your life, you might also have the emergency brake on, the handbrake. It's that feeling of being at complete cross purposes with yourself. And that's what is beginning to diminish radically. And maybe it will ultimately disappear. I don't know. I haven't reached that point yet, so I can't verify it for you through my own experience. But that is definitely the direction that I'm heading in. And I strongly suspect that it's the fast track. So when you and your ego self are on the same page, the unloving self-talk starts to disappear. The judgments that are made by you about you, because they're starting to lessen and diminish. And once again, that interesting law that causes immediate outside reflection or instant replay on the outside of what's occurring on the inside, it means that as your own self-judgment is replaced by a much more authentically loving, much more holistic attitude toward your own self, then the critical judgments that you make of others also diminishes greatly. And again, maybe with time it will disappear altogether, so that you're naturally more loving towards all you perceive. And if you tend to be a worrier, or you have trouble trusting that you're naturally supported by all that is, you might find yourself suddenly inevitably being fitted with a deep sense of well-being for no particular reason. Because it used to be a key part of your ego's job description to keep you in fear and uncertainty and anxiety. But when you're both happily working towards the same goal, so to speak, both aspects of you now being integrated and knowing yourselves as one holistic personality self, this need to pull in opposite directions no longer exists. You want what it wants. It wants what you want. So, you know that phrase, I need do nothing? That lovely phrase. How often have you felt the truth of that statement in the marrow of your bones? As in, I am so completely taken care of, so loved by all that is, and everything is so perfectly perfect as it is right now, and I myself am one with that perfection. I need only be in the recognition of this truth. There's nothing in this world that I actually need to do. I have only to be. And my beingness is already assured. So I'm totally, totally good. I myself have only ever touched into that knowing on a few occasions, and it is a very lovely feeling. But there has always been a great deal of resistance in me to the full integration of that knowing. But as the small self and the conscious thinking mind self come together in reunion, this recognition that I need do nothing is perhaps one of the core foundational truths that one can begin to experience in an ongoing way, because there is no longer one foot on the brake while the other foot is on the gas pedal. As the sense of wholeness grows, because of the integration of the conscious and the less conscious self, there's far less need or desire to look outside oneself, to circumstances or to other people, for confirmation that one is okay, because the okayness comes from within. So you can see, you can pretty surely recognize from these descriptions that these are many of the same attributes that we have classically assumed are related to enlightenment. Meaning we've always assumed that these states of being or belief patterns can only be attained by ignoring one's own shadow and consistently reaching upward towards the higher self, the so-called holy self. And this is not in any way a denigration or diminishment of the importance of the holy self. Where else would you want to be except in the light? It's just that in my experience, the ignoring of the dark in an attempt to reach the light makes the road much longer and more frustrating than it really needs to be. So I personally cherish the light of the holy self, but at the moment, I mostly use it for illumination purposes and for guidance and for inspiration. And it is that very inspiration, that higher self inspiration, that has inspired me to turn my face toward the shadow, towards the small self, the ego self, and to focus most of my love and attention there. This might not be a permanent thing, you know, a permanent focus of my energies and my attention, but it's where I'm at right now. Integration of the conscious self and the less conscious self is what's on my plate, and I find its potential to be very far-reaching and really exciting on so many different levels. And as this integration continues to deepen, I have no doubt that this personality self, the one I think of as me, will quite naturally and seamlessly allow itself to be lifted more and more into light. And that's because one's vibrational frequency, one's energy field, can reach stratospheric heights and stay there way more easily when there's no longer one foot on the gas pedal and the other one on the brake. So I want to change gears a little bit now, and I seem to be big on the car analogies this week. I want to shift gears and talk about some of the finer points having to do with the kinds of thoughts that will raise your frequency in the most efficient manner. We sort of touched on this a little bit in previous weeks. Because as we mentioned before, all of these efforts to join with and uncover the mysteries of the small self, they're made possible and they're supercharged by the commitment to move yourself into the highest frequency that you can attain in that moment before you do any sort of spiritual excavation. You just get in the habit of moving yourself into the highest frequency that you can. Because that move into the highest possible frequency that you can manage will bring you into the realm of the greatest possible clarity, wisdom, and divine inspiration that resides in that higher frequency. And I've spoken in previous weeks about gratitude as being the key entrance point into consciously moving one's frequency into a higher state. But honestly, it really doesn't have to be gratitude that you start with. I just personally find that when I've noticed that my own frequency has dipped, and when it dips, by the way, you might find that you are not particularly in the mood to be joyful or loving or grateful, because, of course, this lower frequency that you're in does not particularly support or encourage those higher feelings. But when I do notice that my frequency is a little bit on the knuckle-dragging side, gratitude usually feels like the easiest way to start moving myself back up. It usually feels reachable. So what does gratitude have that, say, pessimism does not? If I had access to video at this moment, I would show pictures of those water crystals from Dr. Emoto's research. You remember those experiments from a few years back? They labeled a jug of water with a word like, oh, I don't know, anger, or a statement like, I don't like you. And then when they froze the water and looked at the crystals under high magnification, those water crystals were mangled and a little bit like confused or chaotic looking. But when they labeled the water jug with a statement of higher intent, like, thank you, then that water crystal was in a coherent, symmetrical form. And the same was true, of course, for statements like, I love you. These higher intentions each brought a different configuration to the crystals. Excuse me. So the I love you water crystal had a different structure than the thank you water crystal, naturally, because each of those statements carries its own specific energetic signature. But the thing that was the same about both water crystals was that they were both coherent. They were not scattered. They were not jangly or deformed in any way. They were well-formed and geometrically symmetrical. So if I had a video screen at this moment, which I do not, I would show you these various water crystals just as a visual reminder of the power of these various intentions. And also the power of coherence. The coherent energy field is primed and ready for a rapid upward ascent into higher and higher states. Even if you began with an energy field that was in the doldrums, or maybe even lower than the doldrums, by choosing to feel gratitude, even though you wouldn't be in the mood for gratitude at first, this choice automatically brings coherence to your field. It automatically lines itself up correctly, which is why gratitude makes you, the grateful one, feel so good. You're instantly responding emotionally and physically to the positive feeling of coherence that has been produced in your own energy field. And while we're on the subject of Dr. Emoto and his water experiments, he also did quite a bit of work with water that had been polluted with toxic waste. And the before photos, as you can imagine, were deeply distorted. But then they took that water and did the same sort of treatment on it. They put it into a container, and in this case, they offered it a blessing. And when they later photographed those crystals, the blessing had completely changed the nature of the water's incoherence. It had taken a recognizable, symmetrical, coherent form. It was no longer behaving as though it was toxic, in other words. So experiments like these have incredibly profound implications for the healing not only of your own body-mind, but for the healing of your own planet and your universe, really. Intention and vibration are unbelievably powerful aspects of your creative nature. And a single person's incredibly potent power of intent, at least potentially, is really almost too vast to contemplate. So with this in mind, with the experiment that showed what happens when toxic pollution is blessed, I want to suggest an exercise that comes from Matt Kahn. And this would be my suggestion for the second step to take in raising your own frequency after you've successfully implemented gratitude. After you feel your field come into coherence, meaning that you've begun to feel genuinely good through your ability to feel grateful, Then I would suggest moving on to the following exercise as the next step. Matt once said something that stuck with me very deeply. He said something to the effect that people often ask him how they can walk around in life knowing the embodied truths of the universe that he knows. They want to know what he knows in order to be like he is. And his answer was, you don't need to know what a master knows. You just need to do what a master does. And then he recommended this incredibly simple exercise. As you go through your day, you make the firm intention that you're going to bless everything you see. So if you're driving to work, for example, every one of the cars and every one of the drivers of those cars that you meet on the road, you say to yourself silently, may you be blessed. And yes, it's a silent exercise. May you be blessed. And you do this with the trees, and you do this with the birds, and you do this with your boss, and you do this with the trash can and the cigarette butts outside the back door of the bus terminal or whatever it is. You make absolutely no judgment and absolutely no distinction between good and bad or worthy and unworthy. Everything is blessed equally. And you do this as often as you can, for as long as you can, in between living your life, you know. So just in general, this is a really valuable exercise. And the value is twofold. One is that you actually are behaving sort of like a master with training wheels. Because a true master, of course, is blessing everything they see 24/7 automatically through the absolute coherence of their own energy field. Their field itself is the blessing. And they're not having to consciously think, may you be blessed, because that blessing is automatically occurring in a being who already knows themselves as divine love. So the blessing that automatically comes from a being like this would be limitlessly powerful and completely unconflicted. But, you know, obviously when you're just a regular person doing an exercise, the effect is not going to be quite as powerful as that. Mainly because your mind, and therefore your energy field, is still quite conflicted. It doesn't fully believe that there's no difference in worthiness between the inner city graffiti tagger over there and the magnificent double rainbow in the sky over here. It might seem a little bit easier, maybe a little bit more natural, to bless one than the other. But still, this is a very worthwhile practice to develop. And because it fosters great coherence in your field, it will raise your overall frequency more and more, assuming that you're able to do the exercise with the maximum amount of sincerity that you can muster. So that's the primary kind of value that the exercise has. But there's a secondary value as well. And the second kind of value it has is this. Just saying the words, may you be blessed, towards everyone you see, even if it's like some sort of meaningless mantra without any attempt to sincerely mean them, that too will have a certain amount of value on its own, simply because it occupies your mind with something other than the usual junk food thoughts that contribute to the constant stream of thought pollution that's pumped out nonstop by the collective civilization of planet Earth. So when you're occupied with saying, may you be blessed, to everybody you see on the street, you're temporarily unplugging yourself. And instead of offering thoughts that pollute and degrade, you're offering thoughts that contain at least a tiny bit of actual nourishment for your world. So just the unplugging from that toxic stream, that has a certain amount of value. And then offering a tiny bit of nourishment instead of junk food thoughts, that has value too. So this is a valuable exercise any way you look at it, regardless of what your state of mind is like when you're doing it. And of course, if you can actually put your serious intention behind the blessing, then there's quite a lot of value there for all concerned. So if you're inspired to try this exercise, I would say try to do it often and for as long as you can before you forget about it or, you know, before the general busyness of your day takes over. But in terms of using it to raise your frequency even higher above the entry point that you may have experienced through gratitude, this exercise has the potential, at least, to take you pretty far up the scale, if you let it, all the way into love and bliss. Because when you're blessing everything you see, again, depending on how unconflicted you are in your blessing, but as you bless all that you witness, your attitude is actually very closely lined up with the way that your creator sees things. And the closer you can come to seeing as your creator sees, the higher your frequency will go. So that's one excellent exercise for continuing to raise your frequency. And here's another one that I sometimes use as a third step in that process. And it may or may not resonate for you, but I have personally found it very satisfying and very helpful. And that is that when you find yourself walking out in nature and, you know, you've done the other two steps, you're already in gratitude and you've already moved through that first stage of juicing up your frequency. You found lots of things to be grateful for. And then you moved on to the second stage that we just talked about, and you've been blessing everything you see for a few minutes. And, you know, now maybe you're feeling pretty good and pretty connected. So from this already significantly higher frequency state that you're now in, here you are out in nature, and you just tune into your surroundings. And you see if you can feel that everything around you, all of nature, the sky, trees, birds, and insects, and even the pavement or the gravel or road beneath your feet, as well as your body itself, that all of these things, all of these elements that are seemingly separate from each other and from you, that there's actually an underlying invisible web of life supporting every one of these things. So you just experimentally tune in to see if you can notice this underlying connectivity, this invisible web. If you're able to tune into it, and if you can detect it there, then you see if you can feel into it maybe a little bit deeper and notice that the intrinsic quality of this web is that it has the ring of joy about it. It bursts with vitality, but in an incredibly soft and beautiful way. You can give this invisible web any sort of name. You can call it what you want. For these purposes, I would use the shorthand title of God, which is not hugely accurate, maybe, but it does have unmistakably divine origin, which you can feel about it immediately. So for these purposes, let's just call it God. So if you can feel this web that supports all things, and you can sense that it's also the raw material, the building block, from which all these things are created, if you can start to sense this, then you can bring your attention even closer still. You can focus on it even more deeply, and you can tune into this God web. You can hone in on it with your attention and your intention and sort of merge with it. And you can choose, maybe, to feel God rejoicing in all things. And like I said, you can use different languaging, of course, if you'd rather call it something else, something other than God rejoicing. But the inherent quality of it is that there is a present moment rejoicing, or an endless state of joy about it. So you can notice that quality, notice it occurring within yourself and all around you in everything, and you can call it whatever you want. Anyway, if you can manage to do this, and I recommend that it's worth a try, this is a very effective tool for moving your vibration higher and higher. because quite obviously you're choosing to focus your thoughts and intention in a way that is very, very close to the way that your creator sees creation. You're not only blessing everything that you see, which was step two, you're tuning in to the very life force that makes all things possible, and then you're noticing the divine joy that is an inherent part of this life force. So once you've noticed that, it's kind of hard to go on telling yourself stories about your own imperfection or all the things that are imperfect about the world around you. When you're tuning in firsthand to experience the divine joy that's eternally occurring as the creator experiences its creation. Because God, for lack of another word, is entirely pleased with its creation. It's only we who have issues with it. So this exercise, if you're able to tune in and feel this single continuous field, this unbroken web of God rejoicing in all things equally, it's an awesome way to move your frequency ever higher. And it can also have profound effects on the way you experience the world around you, if you let it, of course. Now, here's another slight gear shift change. I want to talk a little bit about Abraham. For anybody who's familiar with the teachings of Abraham via Esther Hicks, Abraham has been talking about the importance of keeping one's vibration high for a very long time. But I want to make a little bit of a distinction here, because I think it might be helpful. Because their recommendation for how to do that, at least when I first heard it anyway, it always struck me as being a little bit trite, something that was not nearly sophisticated enough for a quote-unquote serious spiritual seeker like myself. They always recommended that if you want to move yourself into higher frequency, that you go do something like watch a funny movie or pet a puppy. You do something that makes you laugh. You do something that distracts you from the low vibratory state that you find yourself in. And I would think to myself, oh, please. But Abraham is casting a wide net. They want as large an audience to learn about their teachings of personal empowerment as possible. And many of those people who follow their teachings have not yet identified themselves as wanting to awaken from the dream. Some of them might have no idea that there even is a dream. So really, this advice that they give is absolutely spot on if you're talking to a wide audience. And even for those of us who do aspire to self-realization and emotional freedom to boot, there might be moments when this is good advice for us too. Because now and then, your vibratory state is bound to dip quite low. Just because it's the nature of things. And it might be quite hard from that very low state to successfully use cleaner, more direct methods for regaining a viewpoint that is lined up with the high-frequency viewpoint of all that is. So if you try like mad to be grateful about something or to bless something and it just ain't happening because you're feeling that low, then by all means, go find yourself a puppy to pet. Do something, anything that makes you feel truly good and that makes you honestly forget about how bad you were feeling a minute ago. And then, and this is what is different here in what I'm recommending, the moment that you notice your frequency has lightened a little bit because of this pleasant distraction that you've been doing, whatever it happens to be, then you right away seize the initiative and you swiftly move yourself right back into gratitude or blessing all that you see, etc. And you raise yourself out of that low state with an intention to stay out of it. Because the funny movie or the puppy or whatever it is, that distraction is only going to last a very short time. It's like a shoehorn or maybe a crowbar that helps you pry something up out of the mud. But beyond that temporary leverage that it gives you to pry yourself out of the sticky stuff, it has no real nutrient value It's probably not going to enrich your journey in any significant way, unless it was a particularly great movie, and it's not very likely to lead you to any greater realizations. So I don't tend to use distraction as a means to lighten my mood or raise my frequency unless it seems like the only option. I personally prefer to bring my vision into as close alignment with the truth of existence as I can manage it. And that seems to me as the most worthwhile way of monitoring and raising my frequency level that I can possibly do. So while we're on the topic of Abraham, I will address the small elephant that's been dancing delicately around in the center of the room that we've been circling around for a number of weeks now, probably every week since I first began this thing. I will start by saying this. It's a wonderful thing that the information about the law of attraction has made it out into the collective consciousness as broadly as it has, thanks to The Secret and thanks in part to the teachings of Abraham. And I know there are others, there are plenty of others, who've also been teaching on this topic for quite some time. And collectively, they've managed to get this information out there in a way that has caused the world to take notice. It has firmly entered the pop cultural consciousness. And overall, I think that's a great thing. It's a vastly empowering occurrence. But personally speaking, one might wish that a slightly more balanced or more serious or more in-depth version of this teaching might have caught the collective imagination. Because, of course, the way it's most broadly understood and practiced by its most enthusiastic adherents, it tends to be all about the vision boards and the new house and the new car and how to make $1 million and so on and so on. So this teaching of such profound and multi-layered importance is trivialized and reduced to that, which is kind of not unlike taking the thousands of years of the breadth and depth of yogic lineage with all of its profound wisdom and mystery and reducing it to a 45-minute exercise class that gives me a good yoga butt to show off in my cute yoga pants. And obviously, there's nothing wrong whatsoever with attracting the right mate or the nicer car any more than there's anything wrong with staying toned by doing yoga. That is not my point. But because the law of attraction has been introduced in the way that it has, and because it's been embraced and understood in the way that it has, the whole thing has kind of an oily smell about it, you know? It's been illegitimized by popular culture, in other words. And as a result, those of us who are, quote unquote, seriously spiritual, generally speaking, we want little to do with it. But here's the thing, and I'm speaking only for myself here. The clearer my vision gets, the more painfully obvious that mistake shows itself to be. Because it does not matter how any of us feels about the law of attraction, or the law of creation, as I sometimes prefer to call it. It is an irreversible law. It is the very structure by which our experience of the dream takes place. It's also the structure through which our dismantling of the dream takes place. All of it takes place through the magnetic pull or the magnetic repulsion generated by your own energy field. And this is an irreversible aspect of your own identity, your own individuated identity. You attract things that are similar to your own vibration, and you repel things that are unlike your own vibration. and there is no way to put the functioning of this law on pause. You are a constant creator. We are all constant creators. And nothing comes to you. Absolutely nothing that you perceive in your world can show up in your experience if it isn't in some way already a match for your own energy field. You call everything you experience into being through your own vibratory frequency, which is just another way of describing the activity that you have going on in your energy field. It's the rate at which your energy field vibrates. The higher and clearer the vibratory frequency of your energy field, the more lofty the experiences of this world that you will automatically attract to yourself. The lower and muddier your vibratory field, the more incoherent it is. Obviously, you will attract experiences of life that are more in line with that. So I would say, ignore this law at your peril, or at least ignore it and be the poorer for it, no pun intended. But you can see that the structural underpinning that is performed by this law of creation, this is also what makes it clear that one can never, ever truly be a victim of circumstance, which was kind of what we were talking about in the very first week. It's structurally impossible to be a victim of anything precisely because of this law of creation, because we always attract everything that we experience without exception. And it can't be any other way. It's not possible. Structurally speaking, electromagnetically speaking, we couldn't possibly be the victim of some random thing that we haven't already chosen, vibrationally speaking, to experience. It isn't possible. We are always choosing. We're just not always choosing consciously. And obviously, that's not just the case for each of us as individuals, it's equally true for the collective. We enter into these mass unconscious agreements based on both our individual and also the group frequencies of our collective energetic fields. And unconscious agreements, generally speaking, are not pretty. And some of us chafe against some of these agreements, but very few of us take any action to do anything about them, if we even notice them in the first place. Collectively speaking, it's kind of like we're all sleepwalkers, dazed and confused, standing around aimlessly on the deck of a great big ship. And the ship's wheel is spinning crazily, first in one direction and then the other. And there's nobody really taking the wheel. Some of us, the slightly more awake ones, we might notice that we're feeling kind of seasick, and we see the ship's wheel spinning out of control. And we might talk about it on Facebook or something, how we disapprove of how the wheel spins. But that's about all the action we take, because we're still largely too sleepy. And so nobody steps up to take the wheel. Well, actually, I take that back. There's always somebody who is more than willing to step up and take control of the wheel if you don't want to do it for yourself. There's always somebody who's paying close attention who will be delighted to grab control and steer the collective boat in the direction that they would prefer to see it go. And the world is full of examples, historically, of a handful of very proactive people, usually with nefarious purposes in mind, who are dragging the collective ship into directions that none of us would really choose on purpose. And the world is not in a particularly good place because of it. But aside from what's going on with the collective, in talking about what's occurring with your own little personal vessel, if you're not making efforts to master your thoughts and to choose your energetic frequency, then you're not at the wheel of this little craft either. And you can't get off the boat. You are the boat. and it's always going someplace. You're constantly sending it places via your thoughts and your feelings and your beliefs and your actions. It's automatic because your boat and its constant interaction with the water is purely electromagnetic. It's all about frequency, in other words. So when your thought stream is largely unconscious and unmonitored, and when you allow unfiltered, unconscious, negative thoughts and beliefs to flow freely, that's when creation happens more or less without you. You're still doing the creating, but very little of it is being actively chosen by you. I mean, technically speaking, all of it is being chosen by you, of course. But very little of it results in you receiving what you would wish to receive or experience in your life. And so when we look around in the world, this is largely what we see. We see people being dragged around by the electromagnetic content of their own minds. And we see the equivalent worldly experiences being drawn to them and to us, the ones that match the chaotic, low-frequency incoherence of their unmonitored thought stream. So we are all entirely responsible in one way or another for the world that we see. And this, of course, is part of what makes it seem so daunting to have to take responsibility for our own true identity as creators. It's part of the reason, a big part, that we hide from our own divinity. Because the things that we've created, clearly, are pretty messed up. And we don't want to have to look at the awful creations of this world. And we also don't want to have to look at the unbearably beautiful aspects of our own identity either, or the unlimited power that we each possess, which is also an undeniable aspect of our own true identity. But these are all things that we have to come to grips with if we are ever to know ourselves as we really are in truth. Nothing about yourself can be resisted while all the while you still fantasize that someday soon you'll know what it is to experience heaven on earth. It ain't going to happen. Everything must be embraced and accepted exactly as it is. Because no resistance can be brought with you into the awareness of heaven, simply because the extremely high-frequency state of heaven awareness can't support it. So to end the resistance to your own true identity, in large part, means ending the resistance to the recognition that you yourself are an infinitely powerful creator. And like everything else, this cannot be an intellectual recognition only. You have to know yourself through firsthand experience as being infinitely powerful in the creation department. And that's where things like miracles come in. You need to know that you yourself can participate fully to be able to allow such occurrences to flow through you at will, in full partnership with the higher aspect of the divine self. You're not causing miracles, but you are open to the inspiration, open to the miracles that flow through you, and fully confident of your role in this. Because you need to know firsthand that you are miraculous in nature. And incidentally, this is another area where it's hugely beneficial to be joined in purpose with the small self. When you and the ego self are largely on the same page and wanting the same things, then it will be way easier to think and intend higher thoughts that hold great coherence, and therefore, great nutrient value to the collective at large. because your underlying egoic beliefs will no longer be fear-based and lack-based. You'll find it far easier to trust in all that is. You will more easily know that you are loved and that you're safe, which then makes it easy to feel authentic gratitude and everything else of higher frequency. And your genuinely authentic thoughts and beliefs about love and trust and safety and abundance will be felt by the larger collective as well. So you're helping everybody to unplug a bit from the field of toxic thought pollution that currently is the more dominant stream on this planet. Because every bit of energetic coherence that you or anybody else emits via your higher frequency thoughts and beliefs, every bit of that helps to wake everybody else up and then makes it easier for others to follow in your footsteps to rise in frequency and free themselves from the low vibratory muck. So there are many, many reasons why a deep and very serious study of the law of attraction or the law of creation should be undertaken by serious spiritual practitioners, in my opinion, because I fully maintain that it is a bringer of freedom. And, spiritually speaking, here is yet another way to use the law of attraction, which is, it's something that I've suspected for many years, but I rarely ever heard anybody speak about it until recently. The law of attraction can be used for anything you desire, obviously. But it doesn't have to be the house or a thing at all or a relationship. If greater spiritual freedom is what you desire, as I do, then the law of attraction can be used to attract just that. If you aspire to walk around in a state of embodied experience of the oneness of all things, if you want to always be able to tune in and recognize that web of life force that I called God rejoicing in all things, as, you know, just one example, then that becomes the item that you choose to attract. If you aspire to walking around with a clear, bright, coherent energy field, then that's the thing that you choose to attract. And you would take the same kind of steps to attract this state of being that you would for any other thing that you wanted to attract. And this actually does work because I've tried it and succeeded with it a number of times. It is like a booster rocket. It's pretty amazing, actually. And I'm assuming that everybody here is already at least a little bit familiar with the law of attraction basics, because there isn't really enough time to go into all of that here in any kind of meaningful depth. And besides, it would be probably vastly redundant for those who are already well acquainted with it. But I will cover it very quickly here in just a tiny nutshell. The law of attraction is called into action through you having a desire, and that desire is then activated by being combined with a feeling state. And that is, you know, the quickest, like, one sentence explanation of it. So if you said, I hate my job, I wish I didn't have to go to work today, that's the expression of a desire. And if you pair that with a pang of despair or some other similar feeling state, you just activated the law of attraction to bring you something that matches that frequency. Oops. You're not necessarily bringing yourself being fired, but you're bringing something of low frequency and despair into your experience. And how many hundreds of times a day do we stumble through life having those kinds of thoughts and feelings matched up together and then wondering why life looks the way it does. In every moment, you're expressing some sort of desire and you have some sort of feelings about it because it's impossible not to. Even an effort to walk around in non-desire and no feeling still activates the law of attraction to bring you things that are a match for that, because there is no escaping the functioning of the law itself. And obviously, I only gave you a negative example just then. There are so many thousands, millions of kinds of positive examples, too, that can happen without you making a conscious effort. But if you're looking to exercise some consciously monitored choice here when it comes to your own thoughts and your own feeling state, if you're attempting to exercise some mastery over the process, you would not only choose your thoughts and your feeling states, you would choose to feel as if the desire has already been fulfilled right now. To feel that you already have the object of your desire right here and now in the present moment, as opposed to waiting for it to occur in the imaginary future that never arrives. So you have to imagine that it's already here, and then you offer the wonderful feeling state that you imagine goes along with it already being here. So you're matching your frequency via your feeling state to the frequency of the thing that you're desiring, whatever the thing that you're desiring is. And then finally, deep gratitude is offered while all the while you're still feeling the reality of this present moment fulfillment of the desire. And then once that has been done, you just trust the crap out of it. You trust the infallible and impersonal nature of this law, because it works with you and without you. And you never let doubt creep into your thoughts, because doubt is a deal killer. Doubt rewrites the original desire, which is then translated as a desire not to have the thing you initially asked for. But if you can manage to remain doubt-free, no matter what the 3D world is showing you, because the timing of things is never in your control, then you are sure to experience either that exact thing that you think you want or something else that is a vibrational match to it. And of course, you know, there's a whole world of nuances and much more finely tuned teaching surrounding this, of course. And one could very legitimately ask in a sort of Advaita police kind of way, well, who is the I that wants the things that it's asking for? And, you know, that's true enough as far as it goes. But the process of creation is always overseen by the higher self. It's you who asks for the things you desire, and they're brought to fruition or not according to the timing and wisdom of the higher divine intelligence within. You are a co-creator in terms of you being the one who chooses to steer the boat in a general direction. But higher wisdom is more like the sea of awareness that your little boat is in. And trust me, if it's spiritual states of awareness that you're asking to experience, you will set in motion a leg of your journey that is in many ways very traditional. Like, you can start out with law of attraction, but it goes into ways that you will recognize. Meaning you will draw to yourself quickly the teachings or the pivotal experiences that will become the catalysts for you to meet that goal, the original goal. All you're doing by implementing the law of attraction is that you're setting a clear and specific course toward the state of being that you desire. It just saves time, that's all. And speaking of time, it looks like we are pretty much out of it. I have had such a good time being with all of you for these past several weeks, and I really thank you all for your attention. As I've rambled on for these several hours. And I hope that you found at least some of these suggestions useful for simple exercises that you can do in terms of retraining the mind. And I would really urge you to try putting out feelers for starting to form a meaningful relationship with the small self, if that's something that resonates with you. And then the exercises and techniques that you can use to raise your own frequency. So I hope there's something here that's been of value for you in whatever way that feels pertinent to you. And that's it. That's what I got. I offer you all my sincerest respect for your continued journey, whatever it happens to be, every one of you. And much love to you all. Thank you, and you are very, very welcome. Bye, everybody.
Thank you so much, Carrie. This was powerful sharing. I really have enjoyed your series, and especially tonight. And on the radio, if you are inspired by the current talk, sorry, hold on for a second. You can go to the awakening-together.org website to donate and support the current mini-series and click on, and Carrie will get the donation. But since tonight is her last night, you only have I think a couple of days to do it. So we have 2 minutes. So I'm going to play Cortana.
Still.
Ari, this mic is all yours. Thank you so much. Good night, everyone.
Alrighty, thank you, Lynn. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And now it's time for the daily quote. 10 p.m. on the East Coast. And the daily quote is by Dr. David Hawkins. Love is misunderstood to be an emotion. Actually, it is a state of awareness, a way of being in the world, a way of seeing oneself and others. David Hawkins. And I'll post the quote again for our new arrivals. Whoops. I only got the signature. Stand by one moment. The daily quote, love is misunderstood to be an emotion. Actually, it is a state of awareness,